Spotlight. Go back to gallery view and mute background noise. Leave option two unmute and put source page in chat. That's my checklist. One second. If my computer behaves with to me for me tonight, we'll be good. Let's see, where's my chat? There's my chat. Okay, that's the source page, which we may or may not get to. We'll see. We'll certainly need the screen, so we're good. Okay, everybody with me? We ready to jump in? All right. We are going from last week. We talked about okay, I'll have you all on my screen, even though I'm sharing, so I still see you all, so I'll wave over here because I see you over there, but we're good. If you can't keep the cameras on, that's helpful. If not, I understand. We are talking about we're in the middle of the story of Sheva ben Bichri. Basically two more elements to the story that we need to address. Last week we talked about Amasa and his dilemma. He goes to Gibeon, he goes to the area of Binyamin, which on the one hand it's the area of Binyamin, it's the area of Sheva ben Bichri, which leads us to the impression that he has, the reason he didn't show up with the army to David's call was possibly a question of whether or not his loyalties have changed. Maybe he doesn't believe in this war. Maybe he sides with Sheva ben Bichri. Unclear. He was, after all, the general who led Avshalom's battle against rebellion against David. And so maybe he's not so loyal. That's one possibility. Another possibility we looked at was the Medrash that says that he didn't show up because he was engaged in what we called euphemistically a kind of spiritual a search. Meaning that in the language of Chazal, he didn't want to be mevatel Torah. He didn't want to stop learning, which is essentially a code phrase, which we saw in the story of Abraham by the four kings, code phrase for the dilemma as to whether or not this war was in fact justifiable. After all, Sheva ben Bichri wasn't a real rebellion. It was just one person. He hadn't really started to build an army. We'll see as it unfolds that that was in fact the case, that it wasn't as big a rebellion as David thought. And so maybe he thought that the whole thing was in question, unclear, but he ends up in the area of Gibeon, which is on the one hand the Mishkan, which is what led us to the latter interpretation, and on the other hand, it's the area of Sheva ben Bichri and the area of Binyamin, which certainly leads to the impression that he has turned on David. And that's more or less where we left off. We also talked a little bit about the fact that David had brought Amasa into the position of the head of the army over, sort of instead of, or in lieu of, Yoav. That was very clearly articulated in chapter 19 when David says to him, come be the head of my army and I will place you instead of Yoav. Passing over Yoav as the chief of staff is quite a dramatic step. It's the first time David has actually done so. He's threatened it. Yoav has been, on the one hand, loyal to David, on the other hand, a challenge to David. But this is the first time he's actually done it. And that's where we left off. So just to kind of do a quick recap, Yomer HaMelech al Amasa, Ziklit Ish Yehuda Shloshit Yamim, go gather the forces of Judah. And for 3 days I'll meet you here. Amasa goes, Laziket Yehuda, and Vayoche min ha-Moed, he doesn't show up. Vayomer David el Avishai. Now Avishai is Yoav's younger brother. Remember, there are three original brothers of Tzruya, sons of Tzruya, Yoav, Avishai, and Asael. Asael was killed back in chapter 3 of Shmuel Bet in the battle with Ishbosheth and Avner. Avner killed him when he was chasing after Avner. Avner warned him. He said, "Cease, desist. You're not gonna. I'm gonna kill you if you don't." And Azazel continued to pursue him. Avner turned and he killed him. In the end, that we'll come back to that piece of the story in a moment. And so that leaves us with Yoav and Avishai. They have fought together. Why is my computer doing funny things again? Okay, we're good. We're back. You see the screen again? Yeah. Okay. Why is what were you just discussing before my computer glitched? Avishai and Yoav. So David passes over Yoav again the second time when Amasa doesn't show up, and he turns to Avishai. And he says to Avishai, "Ata Yerushalayim ben Bichri min Avshalom." Now, Yerushalayim ben Bichri is going to be more of a threat to us than even Avshalom if he's managed to pull into his gamut even Amasa ben Yeter. Quickly go, take the army, take the special forces, take the small giborim. We'll see the tzva giborim, the kreti, the pleti, and the mighty men, the smaller group, and go and chase after Sheva ben Bichri, lest he end up in a city and escape out of our sight. So, in fact, Yoav's men, which again, we're getting closer to Yoav's placement in the story, which is our subject for tonight, right? Avishai is leading the battle, so Yoav has now been passed over for the second time, and yet, right? So all the people that were loyal to Yoav, they've joined this battle, but Yoav, we'll see, is there as well. Okay, Vayomer Yoav. We'll see in Pasuk Tet, Yoav is there as well. Vayomer Vayitzu Yacharav and She Yoav Akreti VeApleti VeGibor V'Chol HaGiborim. They head north to join, to pursue Sheva ben Bichri. They get to the great stone in Givon, which is the Mishkan. We talked about that. That was where we stopped last week, kind of dealt with the question of the location of Givon. And who comes out to greet them? Amasa. And into this moment right here, where that little blue mark is, right? That little moment of indecision is where you can insert last week's discussion. Namely, Amasa, what's he doing in Binyamin? He's either in Binyamin because he has, well, we now discover that his intentions were duplicitous and that he was actually rebellious and he was going to join the forces of Sheva ben Bichri. Or in which case he's guilty of treason, or he's decided that Sheva ben Bichri is not really a threat, and David's army is this David's war is not justified, and so he goes to hide in the Mishkan, or to be in the Mishkan, or to seek solace and solid unclear, or he got lost. Maybe he just got lost. We don't know. But into that moment, and we'll never find out because he doesn't have a chance to explain himself. But that little kind of pause right there, that's where we stopped last week and said, what's going on? In the meantime, Yoav is not waiting to find out. And Yoav is there. And now it's the first time we hear that Yoav is there. We saw Avishai, we saw Anshei Yoav. We're getting closer. And now we find that Yoav is there as well. But Yoav chagur midol levusho, he's dressed in his military garb. The word madim for the uniform in modern Hebrew for the idea of uniform, madim, you see it in Tanakh, you see it here. Midol levusho, he's wearing his military uniform. Ve'alav chagor cherev mitzumedet al motnav batera. And he had a belt with a sword fastened to his hips. The sword was in his sheath. V'hu yatzah v'tipol. And as he went out, it fell out. What fell out? The sword. Now, how does a sword fall out of a sheath? Swords don't fall out of their sheath, right? That doesn't happen usually. Especially not to generals who are as skilled at warriors as is Yoav. They don't accidentally drop their swords and their weapons. How does a sword drop out of its sheath? Drops out of its sheath only if.
He drops it.
Well, how do you drop a
No,
sword out of a sheath?
I
Maybe
mean,
he's pulling
he
it.
took.
He's not pulling it out of its sheath. It's dropping. It's falling. Right? He's veining as if it fell, because you'll see in the next pasuk, "Vayomer Yoav la'masah shalom ata achi," is it well with you, my brother? "Vatochez yad yamin Yoav bizkan ha'masah l'nishoklo." He by the right hand he grabbed the masah by the beard to bring him close to kiss him. "Va'amasah lo nishmar asher b'yad Yoav." And Amasah did not take heed of the sword that was in Yoav's hand. How was the sword in Yoav's hand? Because it fell out of his sheath, out of its sheath, and he grabbed it, right? He went to pick it up, and Yoav didn't pay any attention, because typically people like Yoav don't drop their swords, right? But if you think about the one motion of turning the small sword, it's sitting on his hips on in its sheath, right? Doesn't take much to flip the sheath around, so that the hilt of the sword is now facing down. In other words, you don't have to draw the sword. You can actually do a quick flip of the sheath in such a way that the sword is now facing with the hilt downwards, in which case it begins to fall. Now, most people wouldn't grab a sword if it's falling out of the sheath like that, because you're not going to grab it from the blade. But Yoav is a very skilled warrior. And one motion and one movement, he kind of reaches for the sword as it's falling, and vayakehu ba'al chomesh, and he stabs Amasa in the groin, kind of just disembowels him, and he just gets him, picks it up as he's dropping it. He picks it up, and in one fell swoop, he reaches to kiss Yoav, to kiss Amasa, and ends up killing him. And he literally, his intestines sprawl upon the ground. He doesn't have to strike a second time. Yoav doesn't miss. Once done. And then Yoav, once Amasa is done, now the pursuit of Sheva ben Bichri continues, but notice the sequence. Notice the sequence. Who's leading the charge?
Yoav.
Yoav. So we go from Avishai leading the charge against Sheva ben Bichri to taking Anshei Yoav with him, to Yoav showing up and dealing with Amasa ben Yeter, to Yoav and Avishai his brother, instead of Avishai and Yoav his brother. Suddenly the tables have turned. Yoav is back in his chair as leading the charge. I'm going to come back to the murder of Amasa in a minute. At that point, a man stood up amongst the Na'arim of Yoav, amongst the soldiers of Noah, and he makes the following public declaration, which is really fascinating. Vayomer, Mi asher chafetz b'Yoav, u'mi asher le'David acharei Yoav. He that favors Yoav, and he that is for David, let him follow Yoav. Meaning, the tables have turned. Now Yoav is in charge. So it comes along this soldier, and it's a battle cry, right? It's like Acharei,
It's
only
not
in
a
this case it's
revolution
Acharei
against
Yoav.
David.
Excuse me?
It's not a revolt against David. It's
Not at
still, he's
all.
loyal to David.
Correct. It's not at all a revolt against David.
It's.
In fact, it proves. To who, right? The whole point of Yoav's efforts here is to defend David. Is to this battle is for right, which Amasa refused to do. Amasa did not gather the army to fight against Sheva ben Bichri. So Yoav will take care of Sheva ben Bichri, all in favor of David HaMelech. Some logs this little nar, and he says, for David and for Yoav, right? David and for Yoav. Yoav is loyal to David. Follow Yoav, follow David. Just a fascinating kind of battle cry to place the story back. Right? Yoav is always loyal to David. It's fascinating. Even in Yoav crosses David and does things that David doesn't like, and David has to distance himself from them, etc. But it's always out of a real loyalty to David, which is just fascinating. Despite the tension between them, that loyalty is always there. Okay, then we have a little sidebar, which is a little gross, but we're going to read it because we need to. So just FYI, Amasa mitkolel badam. Amasa is lying there, wallowing in his blood. B'toch ha-mesilah, in the highway, ve'yar ha'ish ki amad kol ha'am. When the people saw that as the army was passing by, we had a very similar story with Asael, if you remember, with the body of Asael lying and bleeding and wallowing in its blood in the middle of the road, and every kind of the stopping the progression of the army. So this was stopping the people from pursuing after David or after Yoav. So they took Amasa, they put him aside, they covered it like sort of a makeshift burial. They covered it with a garment so that everybody could, they could just move on and they would not be distracted by Amasa. When he was removed from the road, so then the pursuit of Sheva ben Bichri could continue uninterrupted, and the people were now following Yoav in pursuit of Sheva ben Bichri. And the rest of the story is really part two, which is the actual capture of and killing of Sheva ben Bichri and the end of the rebellion. We'll come to that, Bezrat Hashem, in a week or two. For now, I want to come back to the murder of, or the killing of Amasa, I should say, not necessarily murder, but the killing of Amasa, and whether or not this was justified, not justified. How does Tanakh view what Yoav did? Was Yoav correct? Was he not correct? Where do we put this story of Yoav, who takes this moment and doesn't allow Amasa even the right of articulation? He just kind of kills him, and the Amasa is how do we view Yoav? So the truth of the matter is that the first thing we need to remember is that this is not the first time that Amasa, this is not the first time that Yoav has killed a what he perceived to be a rebellious general against. Who has rebelled against or who is potentially somebody who could be accused of dual loyalty or being rebellious against David. Right? Because the story here is remarkably similar to another story, namely, who else has Yoav killed in exactly the same way? Well, let me back up. There are three people in David's life that Yoav has unilaterally killed, more or less, either without instruction or against the instructions of David. They are Amasa ben Yeter, working backwards. Amasa ben Yeter. Previously, we had Avshalom. And prior to that, we had.
I can't remember his name, Batsheva's husband. No?
No. Bathsheba's husband,
No?
but David's instructions. That's not the issue. David's not that.
Right.
That was David's instructions. Now, this is Yoav acting as a general to protect the interests of the army by killing a who is the other general? Who is the other person that Yoav killed?
Shaul's general.
Correct. Shaul's general. Back in chapter 3, his name was Avner ben Ner. All right, so let's go back to Perek Gimel. Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel. To go back to Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel, we have to remind ourselves what's going on. This is just after Shaul's death, and there's a major war going on between the forces of those loyal to Shaul and his sons, namely, in this case, his son who survived the Battle of Har Gilboa by the name of Ishbosheth. And his general who led that campaign, who's Avner ben Ner. And on the other hand, you had David, king in Hebron, right? And his general was Yoav. And if you remember, the story began, we can start from the beginning of the parak, Vatiyah Mechama Arukah ben Beit Shaul and Beit David. There's a great war between them. David goes to Hebron, and David goes to Hebron, Yoav goes with him. Avner was loyal to the house of Shaul. Then there is a kind of a moment of falling out. Perek Bet was where you had the story with Asael, and Avner killed Asael in the middle of the battle. By the way, anybody remember where that battle started? The original battle, where they had the two groups of forces, Yoav's forces and Avner's forces, and they fought it out, and there was a stalemate, and then they went into all that war, and that was when Asael was chasing Avner, and Avner turned and killed him. Anybody remember where that was? It's just an interesting FYI. Really not significant. It just happens to be interesting that it is. In a place called Givon. Same Givon. Givon is the center of Sheva Binyamin, an area called the Brecha Asher BeGivon, which is some sort of a pool of central place in Givon. And that's where they had that campaign. And eventually it ended up costing Asael's life. Back to Perek Gimel. So in the meantime, this Avner has a falling out with Ishbosheth. Whatever the reason for that is, we talked about it at length at the time, and so he decides that it's time to go unite the kingdom together and go to David and bring the people together. Vayishlach Avner malachim al David tachtav lemor lemi haaretz lemor katab yitcha iti v'hinei yadi imach la'asev elecha kol Yisrael. Make a breach with me, I will bring you all the tribes of Israel, one unified people once and for all. So David, in fact, does so, and they make a breach. Dvar Avner ayayim zikne Yisrael lemor gam tmo gam shoshom yitem vakshim et David lemelech aleichem. Avner said to the elders, David was always the person who was the king, he's the person we should be loyal to, and so he kind of brings everybody over to. To or he makes a brit with David. Pasuk of Aleph, Vayomer Avner David, Akuma ve'elcha ve'kabtzal Adoni HaMelech et kol Yisrael, Vayichletu itcha brit. And meets with David, he says, I will bring together all the tribes of Israel, we'll make a brit with you, we'll make a covenant, u'malachta b'chol asher tave nefshecha, and you can be king over the entire land. Vayishalach David et Avner v'yelech b'shalom. David sent Avner on his way, and he went in peace. B'nei, Avdei David v'Yoav ba mi'agdud. And in walks Yoav from a raid that they were involved in. V'shalal rav imam. V'Avner enenu im David b'chevron ki shilcho v'yelach b'shalom. By the time Yoav gets back to the camp, David had already sent Avner back with this agreement in place, negotiated for the unification of the tribes of Israel. Now you understand that if David is negotiating for all of the tribes to come together, what does that mean for Yoav? Partnership with Avner, some share responsibility, maybe a rotating prime ministership. Who knows? I we don't know. Or maybe David will say, you know what? Avner is the general over 10 tribes, and you're the general over one tribe. Maybe we should give the chair to Avner. We don't know. What we do know is that Yoav comes in with the army, and he hears, Vayagidu li Yoav lemor, ba Avner ben Ner el HaMelech, that Avner ben Ner came to see the king. Vayishal chayu vayelech b'shalom. And the king sent him away, and he's gone in peace. Vayavo Yoav vayomer. Masita. Yoav comes to the king and he says, what is this? What did you do? Hinei ba Avner elecha? Lama zeh shilachto? Avner came to you and you just let him go? You just right? You just let him go? Don't you know that Avner has come to deceive you? He's come to know you're going out, you're coming in, he's come to spy on you. He's come to find your weaknesses. He's not coming for a peace delegation. This is Avner ben Ner, general of Ishbosheth. You don't just take the general and have lunch with him. David says nothing. Yoav leaves the presence of David. He sends a message to Avner and he says, come back. We have a message for you. We're not done. V'David lo yada. But we are told that David knew nothing of this plan. And here's the key piece. This is Avner. This is Yoav acting on his own, not by David's instructions. And we'll see the extent to which David goes out of his way to distance himself from this act. Vayashuv Avner Chevron, so Avner comes back to Chevron. Vayatir Yoav otoch hashar, and Yoav takes him aside in the gate, meaning, remember, the gate is the center of the hub of activity. It's where the courts are, it's where the military sits, it's where the shoftim v'shotrim of the judges and the judiciary and the courts, and everybody's in the shahar. The shahar here was the main center. So Yoav invites him to the equivalent of the military headquarters at the Shar Ha'ir, the Berito Basheli, to speak to him in secret, quietly. And there he pulls him aside in the dark alley. Beware of dark alleys with Yoav, because Vayakeu Sham HaChomesh. He smote him in the stomach, in the groin, right? Same exact description, Vayakeu HaChomesh, is exactly how the text in our parak describes how he killed Amasa. You go back to the pasuk. Vayakeuba. Whoops. Sorry, this is my computer doing funny things again. Vayakeuba elha chomesh. Exactly the same phrase, and it's only used in these two places. It might be used elsewhere in Tanakh, but in terms of Yoav, it's used here. Vayakeu shama chomesh. He smote him in the stomach. Vayamot bedam asael achiv, and he died as vengeance for the blood of Asael's brother, which is an editorial comment that Tanakh inserts as to why Yoav did what he did, because Avner had killed Asael, his brother. The rest of the parak goes to great lengths to describe how difficult this was politically for David and the extent to which David had to distance himself from any association with Avner. Naki enochi mamachtim im Hashem Adolam midmei Avner ben Ner. I am guiltless. I had nothing to do with this. This is all in Yoav. God should punish Yoav for him. He should be cursed, the house of Yoav, for generations. This is Yoav, Avishai, Achiv, Hargula Avner. This was all Yoav and Avishai's brother. And this was not me, and it took a public hesped and the public eulogy and shiva and fat and tearing kriya, and it took an extraordinary effort until finally pasuk lamed vav v'chol ha'am mekiru v'yita be'enehem k'chol asher yatzah ha'melach b'enei kol ha'am. They finally accepted v'yedu kol ha'am v'chol Yisrael b'yom ahu ki lo haita me'amelach lamit et Avner. It took a whole effort to get them to understand that they were not responsible, that Yoav was not acting on David's instructions, because the political fallout for such a duplicitous act would have been terrible. That's the story of Avner ben Ner. So on the one hand, I have the story of Avner ben Ner in the beginning of Perek Gimel, and in Perek Chaf, 17 chapters later, we have the story of the killing of Amasa ben Yeter, under very similar circumstances. Fascinating. If you look at these two stories and compare them, unlike Avshalom, which is a completely different parameter, right? There's a lot of parallels between these two events. Right? On the one hand, both of the victims here, Avner and Amasa, share much in common. Namely, what do the two victims share in common? Besides, who killed them? Who were they?
They were family, no?
Besides the family, who were they and what
Generals.
purpose?
They were generals.
They were the generals appointed by David, or going to be appointed by David. Right? They were generals in the army. Abner-Ben-Ner was certainly the general of Ishbosheth. He was likely to become the general of David in a unified army. And Amasa ben Yetta had just been appointed as the new general of the kingdom after David returns. So we're dealing with a Sar Tzava, we're dealing with the general in David's army. Right? Both of them are killed in exactly the same fashion, namely by Yoav in an act of guile. And we're going to come back to that act of guile in a little bit. But in an act of guile, meaning he seems to present himself as a friend, as a colleague, as a personal connection. Here he grabs him by the beard to bring him close to kiss him. Right? He calls him his brother, and he takes his beard, linshoklo, to kiss him. Beware of such a kiss. We call it the kiss of death, right? Because that's exactly what it was. And in the case of Amasa, and in the case of Avner, he also presents himself as, oh, you're going to come into the kingdom. You're going to be a general. I have secret information I have to share with you, political secrets, military secrets, whatever it is. But the Berto Bashelli takes him aside and kills him in a dichotomy. So there's an element of guile and deceit in both of these actions. And that's also significant. From the perspective of Yoav, in both of these instances, there isn't a clear message as to what Yoav's motivation was. And Yoav's motivation is also mixed, and we don't necessarily know which of the various calculations were in play. In the case of Avner, did Yoav kill him because he was avenging his brother's death, as the text says? Did Yoav kill him because Avner was going to replace him, because David was going to replace Yoav with Avner, and he's going to lose his position? So was it personal? Or did Yoav kill him because he really believed what he said to David, which was, you can't trust Avner. He is the general of the opposition. He's the general of the army that's fighting our forces. He is the one who fought us and at Rechav Givon. And now suddenly he shows up because what? Because he loved the Pilegesh of Ishbosheth, and Ishbosheth wouldn't let him have his way with it. I've lost all sense of proportions. This is a man you can't trust. So did Yoav kill him because he doesn't trust him, because he thinks he's really a spy out to kill David, and therefore he's defending David? Did he kill him out of vengeance for his brother's blood, or did he kill him out of a suspicion for his own position as general of the army? We'll never know. We'll never know. But when I come to the story of Amasa ben Yeter, I can ask the same question. Why did Yoav kill Amasa? Did he kill him because Amasa replaced Yoav as the general and Yoav was upset about that? What he threatened to do with Avner, he actually did here. Did he kill him because he was the general of the rebellious army of Avshalom and therefore responsible for all the deaths of Yair Ephraim and as a terrible stain on the story of the Jewish people? Did he kill him because he felt that he had gone over to the side of the enemy, that he had sided with Sheva ben Bichri, because that's why he was in Givon in the first place? He was in Binyamin. So I have almost the same calculations that I have in the story of Avner, I have in the story of Amasa ben Yeter. And the question becomes, was it justified or not? And in the case of Avner, I don't have to think twice. If I ask the question, well, who was right, David or Avner? Was David or Yoav? Was Yoav right to kill Avner? The answer there is clear, because the text is very clear about it. The answer is Yoav was absolutely wrong, immoral, impetuous. Yoav was guilty of murder, of killing Avner ben Ner in cold blood. No question. Agreed? I hope everybody agrees with that. All right. In the case of Amasa ben Yeter, it's not so clear cut. There's a strong case could be made. There's a strong case that could be made that Yoav is acting again out of self-interest to preserve his own position. But there's also a strong case to be made for the fact that here is the person David put in charge of gathering the source forces of Judah to put down the rebellion, and the rebellion is gaining speed. And Amasa ben Yeter disappears, and Amasa ben Yeter is found in the territory of the enemy. Right? So there's a certain compelling argument that could be made for what Yoav does. Again, what I've tried to present is I hope, between last week and this week, a kind of a balance of who Amasa ben Yeter is. We simply don't know. And it could go either way. And in the end, what variable can we use to determine whether Yoav was right, wrong, was he justified, not justified? Right? He will continue to be David's general. He will carry out the orders to put down the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri. Was he right to take out Amasa ben Yeter? How does Tanakh view it? And we don't necessarily have enough information here by itself to make that determination. However, we do have a clear determination, at least from the perspective of David, and really from that perspective, from the perspective of Tanakh itself. Although it's not in this chapter. Where is it? In the beginning of Sefer Melachim Aleph, the beginning of the Book of Kings, this story is referred to, and there we really get a sense of the conclusion. So let's take a quick glance over into the world of Sefer Melachim, Book of Kings, chapter 2. Okay, everybody with me? Everybody understand the question that I'm framing this discussion? Okay. Okay. David, this is now, we've jumped ahead in time. So just to remember, after the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri, Yoav is now the end. By the end of this chapter, Yoav is still firmly entrenched as the head of the army. At the end, this is the last three verses of this parak, Shmuel Bet Parak Chaf. I just went back for a second. The last four verses are a summary of what the kingdom of David looks like when the book closes. We've mentioned before, the last four chapters are appendix that are chronologically out of place. So this is really the end of the book, chronologically. And it ends with a picture of David's kingdom. The Sheva ben Bichri rebellion is over. Yoav comes back to Yerushalayim. The Yoav El Kol HaTzva Yisrael. Yoav was now in charge of the army of Israel, all of the army, one army. Uvneya ben Yoyada. He was the general in charge of this fighting force called the Kreti Evial and the Pleiti. And Adoniram Alamas, and Yeshafat ben Achilud Amazkir, Shiva Sofer, Vitzadok Vavyatar Kohanim, Begami Raya, Ria Yakoin and David. These are all the people in David's cabinet. But the key for us is Yoav is in charge of the army, and Benayahu ben Yehoyada is in charge of this particular fighting force. We don't know who or what they are, called the Kreti Vehapleti. Okay? Remember the name, Benayahu ben Yehoyada. We now move to Melachim Aleph Perek Bet. Melachim Aleph Perek Bet, if in Perek Aleph, there was a rebellion, another rebellion, third rebellion in David's life. In that case, David is on his deathbed. Who rebelled? Who tried to take the throne away from Shlomo? A man by the name of? Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey. We'll go back. Let's go back to Perek Aleph then. Who tried to take the throne away from David? Va'adoniyahu ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani emloch. Adoniyahu ben Chagit. David is lying. The beginning of the parak, the story of Avishag Shulamit Nar Avishu. For now, Adoniyahu, David is on his deathbed. Adoniyahu ben Chagit exalts himself and says, "I will take the throne." Why does he do so? He's the only son left, other than Shlomo, and the one person that nobody in the family wants to take the throne, other than David and Bathsheba, is in fact Shlomo. So there's this conflict as to who will reign after David. He takes chariots and horsemen with 50 men running before him. That should sound very familiar to you, right? That's exactly the language that Tanakh uses to describe the beginning of the rebellion of Avshalom. Rechav parashim, 50 ish ratzim lefanav. It's exactly the same language. Okay. And in the meantime, Adoniyahu can't become king unless he has all the pieces in place. So he needs a general. Vayudvarav, who sided with him? Vayudvarav im Yoav ben Tsruya. Who sides with him? None other than Yoav. So Yoav, fascinatingly, Yoav was loyal to David to a fault, to the very end. But at the very end, he sides with Adoniyahu, who's loyal to David, but not to Shlomo. The story of Bathsheba was not going to carry him to the next generation of the throne if Yoav had anything to do with it. And Eviatar Kohen, and they went to Adoniyahu. Whereas Tzadok HaKohen and Benayahu Ben Yehoyada, who was Benayahu Ben Yehoyada? Remind me? Who I just told you to remember who he was? Who was he?
You just read the general on the Crete and Plate.
Correct. He's the general in charge of the Crete and the Plate. He stays with David. And then you have Natan, and then you have everything else. And I'm not going to get into the rest of Perek Aleph. We just read it as the Haftorah of Parshat Vayechi. And the result is that they anoint Shlomo quickly, and that ends the rebellion. As Shlomo becomes king, the rebellion of Ayugad l'Shlomo l'moy yinei Adoniyahu yirei atamelach Shlomo. Adoniyahu is afraid, and Adoniyahu is yinei achaz b'karnot ha-mizbeach. He's holding on to the horns of the altar, saying, Yishavali kayom amel Shlomo yamit et avdo, swear to me that he won't kill me. And Shlomo says to him, you know what? I won't kill him. I won't harm him. If he behaves himself, he can go home, but if he steps out of line, he's a dead man. I will let him live. And so the king takes him off the Mizbeach, Adoniyahu comes to the king, and he bows down to Shlomo, and Shlomo says, go to your house, you're in the house arrest, behave. If you so much as lift a finger to do anything that looks like you are rebelling against me, I will have you killed. But for now, Adoniyahu sought asylum where? Adoniyahu sought asylum? Bnei Achaz b'karnot ha-mizbeach. He sought asylum in the horns of the altar, meaning what? Strike you as an odd place for Adoniyahu to run to. To run to the Mishkan?
The Mishkan.
David, say that again.
I think it's the Mishkan.
It is a Mishkan. Mishkan. Why? Why does he run to the Mishkan and grab the Mizbeach and say, if he wants to kill me, he's got to kill me here. And Shlomo says, I won't touch him. And so, what's the Mizbeach about? So just, this is going to become very important for us as the story unfolds. The Mizbeach served as a form of Ir Miklat, Mizbeach was a form of a refuge, an escape. If you look at the Rambam, and we're going to see the psukim that it's based on, but if you look at the Rambam in Hilchot Rotzeach, the Rambam writes, HaMizbeach kolet. The Mizbeach had the same status as an ir miklat. You could seek asylum in the domain of the temple, of the sanctuary. Shene'emar, behoreg bezadon, it says by somebody who kills, who murders intentionally, me'im mizbechite, kechen olamut. We'll see that verse in a few minutes, that you can take him off the altar and to be accountable if he is so guilty of murder intentionally. We'll see what that means. Michlal she'areg b'shgagai, no ne'arag b'mizbeach. If you kill accidentally, you can't be killed. You can hold on to the mizbeach as a form of miklat, as a form of refuge, as a form of asylum. Now, whether that applies to Daniel and to, we'll see in a second, is debatable. That's a separate discussion. But just the concept that the mizbeach is extraterritorial, meaning it's a special status. You can run into the Mishkan and claim asylum. Right? You can't kill somebody by the mizbeach. That's what it says. It's a pasuk in Shmot Perek Chav Aleph. Right? If he kills him intentionally, you can take him off the Mizbeach. But otherwise, you can't take him off the Mizbeach. So how that applies to our story, we'll see Bezrat Hashem next week. But for now, just we'll take it at face value that he says to Adoniel, when he sees that Shlomo's become king and he realizes that he's guilty of treason, he runs to the Mizbeach. As if it's a city of refuge, right? As if it's a kanot mizbeach kolet, and he says, "I'm claiming asylum in the Mishkan." Who else ran to the Mishkan to find safety and refuge from somebody who was trying to kill him? Many, 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 many moons ago.
David. No.
Right. David ran to the city of Nov when the Mishkan was in Nov. And the Mishkan is not in Nov anymore because what did Shaul do to it? He destroyed it and killed all the Kohanim because they protected David. And that was the story of Nov. Gotta do a quick review of these little pieces of the story because they're important. All right, so here's Adoniel, and he clings to the Mizbeach, and Shlomo says to him, I will let you live, provided you go to house arrest, you go home, and you behave. Daniel says, you've got a deal. Okay? Next parak. Vayikrivu yemei David lamut. David is on his deathbed, and David calls over Shlomo, and he gives him a list of things to take care of. Unfinished business in David's life. And one of the unfinished business items in David's life is Yoav. He has a few. He has Sheva ben Bichri. And so he has a Shimri ben Gera, which is, we've talked about once before. And he has Barzillai Giladi, but he has this unfinished story of Yoav. V'gam ata yadata, says David to Shlomo, et asher asali Yoav ben Tzruya. You know what Yoav ben Tzruya did to me. Now, before I read the next sentence, okay, I'm going to hide it. Let's hide it this way. So, before I read the next sentence, what did Yoav do to David? Let's list it. Give me the list. What did Yoav do to David?
He killed Avshalom.
He killed Avshalom. Yeah, give me the list. All of Yoav's crimes. List them one at a time.
He killed Amasa.
He killed Avshalom. He killed Amasa. We're not talking about killing in war. We're talking about, against David's direct instructions. Killed Avshalom. Killed Amasa.
Avner.
Killed Avner. Natan. One more. One more. Big one. We just read it.
He sided with
Adoniahu. He sided with Adoniahu. He committed treason against David. He sided with Adoniahu in a rebellion against the throne, to rebellion against Shlomo. Okay. So he's got four strikes against him. Last time I counted, three strikes you're at. He's got four strikes against him. Okay. Of the four, okay, one of them we already discussed. David does not hold him accountable for. Namely, David absolves him, does not hold him accountable for one of those four crimes. Which one?
I'm there.
No.
Oh.
No. All right, so let's read the pasuk. Gam ata yadata asher asali Yoav ben Tzruya, asher asali lishnei sarei tzivot Yisrael, that which he did to the two generals of the army of Israel. Leavner ben Ner ulamasa ben Yeter, to Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeter. Vayahargem, and he killed them in cold blood. Vayasem demei mechama b'shalom. He slew and shed the blood of war in peacetime. Meaning, kill them in cold blood. And he put the blood of war upon his loins and his shoes and his uniform. He wore this as a stain upon himself for the rest of his life. Murder of Amasa ben Yeter, murder of Avner ben Ner. And therefore, he says, "Yasita, do in accordance with your wisdom, but." But don't let his hair go gray before he ends up in the grave. Which is a euphemism for saying, deal with him, but deal with him smartly. So I come back to my question. Of the crimes of Yoav, there are four. What does he hold him accountable for, and what does he absolve him of? Just read it. You tell me. He's committed four crimes: murder of Avner, murder of Amasa, murder of Avshalom, rebellion of Adoniyahu. What does David hold him accountable for? This is not complicated. I don't know if I'm clear or not clear, or if we're asleep. This is not complicated. What does he hold him accountable for? The four.
Avshalom is not listed here.
Avshalom is not listed for. So we clear the chart. He's not held accountable for Avshalom. Next.
Adoniah.
Adoniyahu is not listed here. We've cleared the chart. We're not holding him accountable for Adoniyahu. The only things he's held accountable for here are the murder of Amasa and the murder of Avner ben Ner. Is that clear? This is a critical verse. Because what it tells me is two things. Number one, from David's perspective, and therefore from Shlomo's perspective, Yoav is not being held accountable for the rebellion of Adoniyahu and for siding with him. Why? Good question. But for whatever reason, that's not the issue. What David's issue is an old score that he has with Yoav that he will not forgive. For the murder of Avner and the murder of Amasa ben Yeter. It's not even Avshalom. And we talked about that. Avshalom is his son. But Avshalom he killed in the middle of a battle. Avshalom he killed because it was necessary to win the war. Avshalom he killed because it was justifiable. It was in the middle of war, not in the middle of peace. He's talking about Ve'ariyasem demei milchama b'shalom, killing two people in peacetime. It came to him in the delegation of peace who were not guilty of anything other than wanting to be loyal to David, says David. Now, interestingly, that was clearly true of Avner ben Ner. We argued that that may not necessarily be so clear with regards to Amasa ben Yeter. Correct? But this is where I describe what I said before. This is where David's assessment of Yoav's behavior and the reason for it we still have to explain. But David's assessment and Tanakh's assessment, because we don't find really any critique of David for this, Tanakh's assessment is that he's held accountable here for these two crimes and not for the rebellion of Adoniyahu, which was A, understandable, and not for the rebellion, the murder of Avshalom, which of course was much more understandable. Okay, so from that perspective, however, that leads us to the question of, so what actually happens to Yoav? And that's a fascinating piece of the story. Because what happens to Yoav is also a window into the question of why that's embedded in this verse. Why does David hold him accountable for the murder of Avner and the murder of Amasa and not for anything else? What's so special and unique about that moment that for that he's held accountable and not for anything else, including the rebellion of Adoniel? Sounds to me like it was even worse. Okay, so we're going to, David dies. We're going to move forward in this parak. And after David dies, and we have a little summary of David's throne, and David's reign, and then Shlomo sits on David's throne, and David's kingdom is established. And we have this little episode here, Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is not our subject, but we need to understand that it happened, which is that Adoniyahu ben Chagid, who's been under house arrest and more or less behaving himself for all of these years, comes to Bathsheba, Shlomo's mother, and says, you know what, I've been a good boy. I would like you to do me a favor and give me the hand of Avishag HaShunamit to marry. Avishag HaShunamit was the servant who served David in the end of his life, the Shivcha at the beginning of the parak. I'm happy to take her as a wife. Bathsheba thinks that the matter is an insignificant request. And so he goes to Shlomo, and she says to Shlomo, and Adoniyahu is asked to the hand of Avishag HaShunamit in marriage. Shlomo loses the plot. You all know the expression, you've heard the expression before, right? Shlomo gets very angry. V'yan ha-melech Shlomo v'yomar limo. V'lama tshualet at Avishag HaShunamit l'Adoniyahu v'shalilo tamlucha. Why do you ask just for Avishag HaShunamit? Why don't you ask for the entire kingdom? Why doesn't he just ask to become king? Ki yu'achi ha-gadol b'meni, he's the older brother. And he has Avyatar Kohen and Yoab ben Tzuya. And if he wants to marry Avishag, he might as well rebel and take the whole kingdom. And then he takes an oath and he says, this is the last straw. Adoniyahu is now a dead man, and he has his people go out and ki hayom yumat Adoniyahu. Today Adoniyahu will be put to death. Why is it that so that Adoniyahu's request was seen as a rebellion? I'm going to I'll share with you a hint of an answer. It really requires us to study Sefer Melachim, which is not our topic for today. But if you remember, what did Avshalom do to the king's Pilegeshes when he came to Yerushalayim? He took the Pilegesh as an act of rebellion. Avishag is not the king's Pilegesh because David never had relations with her. But in the eyes of most people, they don't know that. And so, in the eyes of the public, marrying Avishag would be equivalent to Avshalom taking the Pilegesh of David, or Reuven taking Bilhah Pilegesh of Yaakov. Right. So that the context here is exactly the same context. Shlomo understands it, Bathsheba does not. Shlomo sees it as an act of rebellion, and he sends out Bnei ben Yoyada to kill him. Why Bnei ben Yoyada? I'm testing you tonight. Why Bnei ben Yoyada? Who was Bnei ben Yoyada? David, help us out. Who was Bnei ben Yoyada?
He's the general of the Kreti Pleiti.
He's the general of the Kreti Pleiti. He's the private army, right? I said when we read it the first time, I said, remember this name, it's going to come back to us. So he struck him and killed Adoniyahu. Now, who's next in line after you take out Adoniyahu? If Adoniyahu's rebellion is not over, then what's next? Abiatar is the coin. And who's next? Who also joined the rebellion?
Yoab.
So he turns to Avyatar and he says, go home. Go to your fields of Anatot. He exiles him from the Mishkan. Not our subject for now. He expels Avyatar from being a Kohen in the temple. Avyatar is a descendant of the house of Eli. And then we get to our story. Pasuk Chafei. Chafchet. Vashmua Baal Yoav. So then the matter comes to Yoav, and Yoav hears that Shlomo has killed Adoniel by the great Diablati, and he realizes that he's next because he sided with Adoniel. He didn't side with Avshalom, but he did side with Adoniel. So he runs. And where does he run to? Vayanos Yoav el Oel Hashem vayechazek bekarnot hamizbeach. He runs to the temple and takes hold of the horns of the altar. Why does he run to the temple to take hold of the horns of the altar? Where did he learn that from?
He's taking asylum.
Who did he learn that from? Who tried that and worked?
Adoniel.
That's exactly what happened to Adoniel. Adoniel was fled to the temple, grabbed hold of the mizbeach and said, you want me, take me out here. And Shlomo says, you know what? I'm not killing you at the altar. Fine, you want asylum. Go home into house arrest. You're good. Right? So Yoav says, okay, I'll do the same thing. Vayugad lemelech Shlomo, kinas Yoav el Oel Hashem. So Shlomo is told that Yoav ran into the Mishkan. So now he has a dilemma. Adoniel did the same thing, and Shlomo understood you cannot kill him. The Mishmeach is an asylum. He's asked for asylum and refuge, and it's like an ear miklet. You can't just take him out. So Yoav's done the same thing. Shlomo has a dilemma. What does he do? Vayishlach Shlomo b'neyahu ben Yoyada lemor lech pagabo. Tells b'neyahu ben Yoyada. Who is B'nai Ben Yoyada? Captain of the Great Yoplati. And he says to him, go take out Yoav. Even though he is holding on to the Mizbech. Vayavol B'nai Ben El Oel Hashem. So B'nai comes into the Mishkan. Vayomer Elav. And he says to Yoav, Koa Mahamelech, say, I'm commanding you in the name of the king. Leave, come forth, come out of the Mishkan. Why does he tell him to come out of the Mishkan? Because he wants to
take him out.
He wants to kill him, and he can't in the Mishkan because the Mishkan is extraterritorial. Vayomer lo, ki po amut. Yoav says, no. You want me? You come and take me right here. So what do you think B'niyahu does? Right here. It's a standoff. He says to Yoav, Yoav, I want to kill you. Why don't you come out of the Mishkan so that I can kill you? And Yoav says, no, you want to kill me? You come in here. So B'niyahu ben Yoyada, being a good loyal servant, goes back to Shlomo and asks him what to do. Vayashav Benayahu el Hamelech Davar Lemor, Kol Dibre Yoav L'chol Anani. Thus said Yoav, thus I answered. We had a conversation. I told him I want to kill him. He said, fine, you want to kill me? Come in here and kill me. I said, no, come outside so I can kill you. He says, no, you want to kill me? Do it inside the Mizbech. So what do I do? Vayomer lo Hamelech, listen to Shlomo's response. Asay Kasher Diber, do as he said. If he said, kill him inside the Mishkan, that's what you shall do. Ufagabo, ukvarto, strike him and bury him. Vasirota demechinam sheshefach Yoav me'alai u'me'al bet avi. And once and for all, you will remove this the stain of the innocent blood which Yoav shed from upon me and my father's house. Ve'eshiva shemet damo al rosho. God will avenge the blood upon his own head. Asher pagabish. Now listen to how he describes Amasa and Avner. Asher pagabishnei anashim tzadikim v'tovim mimenu, because he killed two people who were more righteous and who were better than he. Ve'argem b'cherev, and he killed them by the sword, without my father's knowledge, without my father's consent. V'avi David lo yada. Who were these two people? Avner ben Ner Sar Tzva Yisrael, and Amasa ben Yeter Sar Tzva Yehuda. V'shavud mehem b'rosh Yoav u'b'rosh Zar'o li'olam. So their blood shall Their blood returned upon the head of Yoav and his descendants for eternity. So what does Yibneal do? So Yibneal ben Yoyada went and he killed him in the Mishkan, by the Mizbeach. Mishkan didn't help Yoav. So that leaves us with a very simple question. Pasuk says, why does the Mizbeach spare, save the life of Adoniyahu? Why does Yoav, I'm going to stop sharing for a second, why does the Mishkan spare the life of Adoniyahu, protect him? Why does it not protect Yoav? Why does Yoav think it will protect Yoav? And why does Shlomo's answer a fallback to the story of Amasa ben Yatran of Nebaner? This whole dialogue centers around the question of what Yoav is being held accountable for, what was Adoniyahu being held accountable for, and what the role of the Mizbeach as an ir miklat, as a refuge, what does it really mean? You follow the problem? Which what I hope I've painted as a picture is the fact that David, Shlomo, even the Navi, puts Amasa ben Yeter's murder and Avner ben Ner's murder in the same category. Both acts of murder in cold blood against the wishes of David to kill blameless people, even though Amasa ben Yeter, we could argue, right? Yoav had an argument to suggest that he was rebellious, but the personal agenda was too strong for us to overlook it. We're going to side with David and the perspective that Yoav killed Amasa ben Yeter at the first opportunity that he had because he saw him as a threat. The justifiable argument of murder that he sided with Amasa ben, sided with Sheva ben Bichri, essentially gets eliminated. The Tanakh's verdict is Yoav is guilty of murder in both the case of Avner and the case of Amasa ben Yeter. He's absolved of the guilt of Absalom, but he's still guilty of three crimes: Avner, Amasa, and the rebellion of Adoniyahu. The subject in the midst of this chapter is the rebellion of Adoniyahu. Adoniyahu is killed for his rebellion. Shlomo goes after Yoav because of his rebellion and siding with Adoniyahu. And yet when it comes to the Mizbeach, he seeks the same asylum of Adoniyahu sought. And Shlomo says, no, because you killed Amasa ben Yeter and you killed Avner ben Ner. You follow? So what we're going to, we've run out of time for tonight, but what we're going to do next week at the beginning of this year is I'm going to quickly review the three primary sources for the mitzvah of Ir Miklat. What is an Ir Miklat? Where does it come from? What is its role? Who goes there? What happens there? And there are three primary sources to address this question. Two psukim in Parshat Mishpatim, about five psukim in Parshat Shoftim, and there's a larger paragraph in Parshat Maaseh. We're going to quickly review and see the differences between them. It'll come to one conclusion. And that conclusion will help us understand what happened with Yoav. Okay? We're good? Still awake?
Accidental, right?
We're still awake? More or less?
Yeah, we're awake.
All right. And that's, for now, we're going to leave it at that. If I start it now, it'll take us way too long to finish it. So we're going to leave it at this moment. And we'll start from here, B'ezrat Hashem, next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.